First, here are two words that don't always come up in the same sentence: depression and hilarious. But our next guest has found comedy to have a big role in understanding and talking about his own mental health, and he's found out that he's not alone in that. John Moe is the host and creator of the podcast The Hilarious World of Depression, a show where he interviews funny people about their experiences with depression and other mental health challenges. Here's comedian Margaret Cho speaking on the podcast.
Depression is really funny because it's just like, it's this thing that's not real. Depression is something that I've suffered from for a long, long time, and it's taken me to the brink of suicide and death, and yet I also know coming out the other side is that it's something that I created, that is something that I do have some control over. That's the thing about it. It's like I realize that I can change this, but I do need to work somehow to get out. And so to acknowledge that that exists, but that it's not really real, is really funny.
John Moe joins us now. He has hosted many public radio programs, and his radio work has been featured on Marketplace, All Things Considered, and Morning Edition. His latest book has the same name as the podcast, The Hilarious World of Depression. John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, we heard Margaret Cho there talking about kind of the absurdity of depression in some ways. How has taking that funny approach, dealing head-on with the absurdity of depression, helped you over the years?
Well, there are different ways, I think, that people can come at the hilariousness. I think what Margaret was getting at was that it's a condition that you can't find on an X-ray or an MRI, and you know that you grew this thing in yourself just to destroy yourself somehow. And the ridiculousness of it is what often gets pointed to as the funny part. Dick Cavett told me that the idea that if there was like an elixir that you could take to cure yourself of it, and it was on a table across the room, and you still just can't find it in you to go up and get it, is an absurd and ridiculous situation. So I think that's part of the humor. But for me, the humor is in just the boundary crossing and just the naughtiness of the whole thing. It reminds me of like if a toddler is driving a car, you know, it's terrifying and somebody might get hurt, but it's this world out of balance that you find some humor in. And then a lot of people just find the humor in these situations that it puts you in, these absurd situations, and then the laughter comes from commiserating with other people who've shared the same experience. And so I find that if you can find what's funny about something as ferocious as depression, then you take away its power a little bit and you build up a little more nerve for yourself, which you can use to deal with it.
And that's one of the things about your podcast that really strikes me. It's two people who have dealt with depression, are dealing with depression, talking about it out loud and sharing it with the world. This thing that typically I think we want to not talk about as a culture and as individuals.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of how this all came about is I lost my brother to suicide about 13 years ago. And I, you know, at his service, I was thinking, nobody wanted to talk about this. He didn't want to talk about it, so he didn't get the help that he needed because he thought it was a moral failing or a weakness. And as a society, we were given a choice, like if to talk about it or not. And if people don't talk about a mental disorder that they're having, it's almost certain to get worse because they're denying themselves both medical attention and being part of a community where there are other people like them. And so we can choose not to talk about it, but if we choose to talk about it, it has a chance of getting better. So in that moment, I mean, it was literally at his service. I said, okay, well, it's stupid then to do anything but encourage conversation and encourage people to open up and encourage that to be as normal as saying I have a toothache or my knee hurts. So that's I decided at that point that I'll just be the loudmouth who talks about it all over the place and tries to model that kind of behavior to make it not a taboo topic, but just something that's a reality in a lot of lives.
in some ways, though, easier said than done. You write about the difficulty of acknowledging that you have depression, that and even difficulty going out and seeking that diagnosis, because you're scared to be diagnosed with depression. You're afraid of what that is going to tell you about yourself. How did you overcome that?
Well, I mean, for me, the resistance was that I didn't think I was worth going to get it checked out at a doctor. And that's one of the lies that depression tells you, is that you're not worthy of treatment. You're beyond help. You're hopeless. Nobody will understand. You're all alone with this weird condition. It's a brilliant mutation, Darwinian evolution, that depression came upon, because it encourages you to isolate, because that's where it can fester. So I just didn't think it was worth the doctor's time, even though that's all a doctor is there to do, is listen to what's wrong with you and try to figure it out with you. And at the time, I didn't think it was worth a copay. And this was when my copay was $10. I didn't think I was worth 10 bucks. But when I finally did get the diagnosis, and this was decades into dealing with this, I was in my mid to late 30s, and I'd been dealing with it since the seventh grade. But when I finally got the diagnosis, it was joyful. It was a wonderful experience, because it was finally a thing that I had and not a thing that I was. So it was something that I was dealing with, but it wasn't my fault. And that's another thing that we try to emphasize on the show, is like, you know, you didn't choose this, because who in the world would choose such a thing? And, you know, you're not doing it wrong. You're not dumb. You're not weak. This is an illness that happened to you, and no different than any other illness that could have, but there is treatment available, and you can find a way to get it.
We're talking to John Moe. His new book is The Hilarious World of Depression. He is the creator and host of a podcast of the same name. By the way, if you're struggling with depression or suicidal thoughts, the suicide hotline is available 24 hours a day at 1-800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. You can chat also on their website, suicidepreventionlifeline.org. John, a lot of the messages in the book and on the podcast, very important for people with depression. What do you want people who don't have depression, what do you want them to know to help them understand and maybe talk better to people who do have depression?
That it's not a mood. A lot of people, I mean, there's the emotion of depression, and it's easy to think that that's what we're talking about. Like, if you're, I was telling my kids, they were really upset that school was canceled for the rest of the year. And I said, you know, you're sad about that. And that is the proper response. Of course you're sad. And I'm sorry you're sad, but this is a healthy response. So just being sad, you're not depressed that your team lost the big game. You're just sad about that. And so depression is a much more complicated affair. It's a thing that you can't get over. It's not, and it's something that isn't taken care of by going for a walk or smiling more, or, you know, watching a funny TV show. Your dour mood might be helped by those things, but this is a medical, mental disorder, and it's not as easily solved as that. The other thing I want people to know is that there are people in your life who are dealing with this right now. And they're not walking around moping. We're like anyone else. They're blending into society, and maybe they're having a rough go of things in that time, but are putting on a mask, or maybe they're doing just fine, but they still have this chronic condition that they need to manage, just as somebody with diabetes needs to watch their insulin level.
We're talking to John Moe, host and creator of the podcast, The Hilarious World of Depression, an interview podcast that features comedians and others sharing their own struggles with clinical depression. He has a new book out by the same name, The Hilarious World of Depression, that details his own experiences and shares lessons from his guests as well. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this part of your life's story? Do you experience depression? Have you been able to talk about it with friends, loved ones, a therapist? Maybe has humor helped you along? Are you a fan of the podcast? What have you learned from it yourself? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with John Moe, host and creator of the podcast, The Hilarious World of Depression, an interview podcast that features comedians and others sharing their own struggles with clinical depression. We're talking about his book of the same name, The Hilarious World of Depression. If you are dealing with depression or suicidal thoughts, you can reach the suicide hotline at 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. Or you can chat on their website, suicidepreventionlifeline.org. If you'd like to join our conversation, if this is a part of your life, depression, or that of a loved one, if you have a question for a guest, if you've heard something that helped you on his podcast, please join in at 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to a caller now. Michael is with us in Kaukauna. Michael, hello.
Hello, yeah. You're right about it. People who have never had anxiety or depression really can't understand what it really does to your soul, how it just knocks you down and you just have a hard time just dragging through the day. And I've had it off and on depending on what bad natural life experiences have hit me. And I want to know how you deal with the humor, those really, really bad things that just knock you down. How do you advise that? That's what I want to hear back. I'll take the answer on the air.
Michael, thanks a lot for the call. Any thoughts, John?
Well, I mean, I try not to give advice because I'm not a doctor, not a therapist. All I can do is share the observations that I've had and that all these dozens of guests that I've talked to. The easy answer is that there is no easy answer. It's a massive trial and error period, because there's no solution that works for everybody. If there was, we'd all do it. But there's usually something that can help anybody. Unfortunately, that's usually discovering that after a long trial and error period. I mean, I write in the book about my experience with dogs, my experience with Bigfoot videos on YouTube, like all these. I tried to think of the weirdest things that actually turn out helping me, from going to see movies out of town, anything to kind of disrupt my way of thinking. But generally, the thing to look for, what I found, is something that can center you, something that can help you bring you back to who you are. And that could be something as easy as a favorite song or a breathing exercise or something that can make the noise stop and make the sort of constant motion in your mind. And the caller makes a really good point that people don't understand it. And I think a lot of times people don't understand why someone with depression or anxiety is so exhausted and why the naps are so important and why the fatigue is there, because the brain is spinning so constantly and so much faster and more frantically than people who don't have to deal with this stuff. So, the more kindness you can show yourself, the more centering and calming you can show yourself in that moment is probably going to work pretty well to illuminate a path forward.
Thanks so much for that call, and good luck to you as you look for what works for you. And that point, John, I think is really important, because I could envision somebody trying a therapist and it maybe didn't help them, that particular therapist, trying a medication and that one didn't help them. And if I was at that point, I might think, well, nothing's going to work for me. This is incurable for me. And that, it sounds like you're saying, is not true.
Yeah, I mean, that's depression lying to you again, if that's the case, because it'd be like turning any song on the radio on and you don't like that song. And then you say, music doesn't work. All music is bad. Well, of course not. You just haven't found the thing that works for you. Or like, going on a date with the first person you see on the street and not falling in love. Well, sure. you know, finding a therapist takes a long time. I've been through several. I'm with one now that it's working really, really well. And meds are the same thing. I mean, when I first got diagnosed, I was put on a medication that like was ripping up my stomach and giving me like, you know, all this weird nervous energy. And I went back to the doctor and I said, okay, I don't think medication is the answer. And he's like, oh, let's just try a different one. And that worked great. So, yeah, I mean, it's there is no single form of therapy and there's no single form of medication. You have to do a lot of trial and error to find what works.
We're talking to John Moe. His new book is The Hilarious World of Depression. He's the host of a podcast by the same name. We're talking about depression, how it affects people's lives, and ways we can live with it. And I think that's another important point you make toward the end of the book, John. We want to have that a happy ending where the person with depression figures out the cure and they're good from here on out. And that, you write, is not really how it necessarily is going to go.
No, if something cures your depression, you never have to worry about it again. It probably wasn't depression that you had in the first place. You might have just been bummed out. I mean, we're a story-driven culture, and we, you know, the common stories that we share are our TV shows and our movies, just as the ancient Greeks had the story of Odysseus. And in all the TV and movies that we watch, by and large, there is an arc to where the hero eventually solves the problem. And that's not really the case when it comes to reality and mental illness. Most of the time, it's something that you have to manage. And you can manage it extremely well. I mean, it's been a long road, but I've found therapy and medication that works. And for particular traumas that were really driving me into the ditch, I did an EMDR therapy, and that was incredibly effective. So, it's there isn't an ending. Andy Richter on our show from the Conan show, Andy was on, and he said, it's like a bad back. It's something that you're always going to be aware of as something that you're capable of. And when it flares up, you fall back on your, you know, like, okay, here's my plan. When it flares up, I got to go to this doctor. I got to do these exercises. I got to do this thing. So you have a plan ready to go. And when it flares up, you take care of it. So it's never going to be gone forever, probably, but it's something that you can manage.
I wanted to bring up the topic of imposter syndrome, that thing where people think, you know, oh, this success I have, I'm just a fraud. This can happen to anybody, but it sounds like for you and a lot of the people you talk to, it's this like fundamental part of your existence. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah. I mean, most successful people I've met have some degree of imposter syndrome where they think that the successes that they've had are either like a fluke or someone's being nice to them for some reason, or like they got away with something. And for most people, like, and it's the people who are successful who never think that I believe you have to watch out for. but for the most part, they're able to like dismiss that, really. They can say, okay, well, that's not true. I have this education. I have this thing. I have this thing. I have, you know, these achievements before it that led logically to this. For someone with depression, it's much more of an existential threat. You can say, oh, I wrote this book, you know, and they don't know that I don't know what I'm talking about, and they're going to close in on me. And the brain of a depressed person is so used to hearing a variety of lies from the illness that that it becomes an existential threat. You really start to think, oh yeah, no, this is all going to collapse. This is too good to collapse because it's a good thing. And it's happening to me and I'm bad, therefore it'll fall apart. You know, it's the deep-seated knowledge that you just inherently are a lousy substandard human being is something you can address with logic, but it's wedged so far deep down in there for depressed people that it still speaks and you still have to watch it and keep it under control.
You mentioned that logic there, and there was a line, I wish I'd written it down. I went back and tried to find it, where I'll paraphrase, basically for a person dealing with an issue like depression, it's impervious to logic. It's logic cannot compete with those messages, those negative messages from your own brain.
Yeah, no, it's because it's a foundational belief, you know, like the grass is green, gravity works, I am a lousy person. and so you can apply logic to it and you can really work at it. And there's great techniques to do it. And there's great help available if you can get to it. And so you address it, but it's still there. Like, it's part of your programming, and it's almost like a trauma. Like a trauma gets put into your mind or into your life somehow, and it's gonna be there. You just have to figure out how to work around it, because you can't make it have never happened. You know, it's a matter of learning how the trauma works, how the depression works, how the anxiety works, kind of getting a feel for how these machines operate, and then you can figure out how to operate yourself around them so you don't get hurt.
In our last few moments, John, you mentioned therapies and other things that have helped you. Does just the sheer act of doing the podcast and having these conversations with people with similar stories to your own, have you found that therapeutic yourself?
It's funny. When we started the show, the very first episode we did was with Peter Sagal, the host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And he had approached me at a party saying, "Hey, I've never told anybody this but a doctor and you right now at this party, but I'm depressed and I want to open up to you about it on the show." And it was a great interview. And I sat down to, you know, cut the tape and to edit the show into a show. And I thought, oh no, what have I done? Like, now my job is to listen to my friend Peter tell me about the worst times in his life. But I realized pretty early that all the stories people tell, and this, you know, and even the act of working on the show too, is it's a comeback story. So when people are opening up, when people are reaching out, when people are being aware and wanting to share that with the world, it's a hopeful sign for the future.
Thanks so much for joining us today. That's John Moe, author of the new book, The Hilarious World of Depression. Again, the suicide hotline is 800-273-8255. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.